It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
You do not make trade policy by announcing today that you're going to raise tariffs by X percent and the next day by Y percent, by attacking the person you appointed as head of the Federal Reserve as an enemy of the American people.
Donald Trump has no plan. This is just chaos. And trade war by tweet is harmful to the U.S. economy. It's harmful to U.S. farmers. It's harmful to U.S. consumers. It makes no sense at all.
Okay, so we had Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, Democratic candidates for president. Actually, now, according to a recent poll, above Joe Biden in the polls. Both of them claiming that the president is incompetent. It's trade by tweet. He's accomplishing nothing. He doesn't know what he's doing. And so let's just see if that's true. Griff Jenkins has a report from the summit, the G7 summit. Here it is.
It feels a little bit like a roller coaster ride in this high stakes trade war, but let me show you something right now. This morning, the Asian markets, look at this. Overnight, the mood, very upbeat. Hong Kong, mainland China, and Japan's indexes reacting positively. They all closed positive, and they're reacting to President Trump's announcement that the negotiations are set to resume and that he's optimistic of a deal. Also, China's vice premier saying they want to resolve the trade dispute through calm negotiations. The president's unorthodox style, of course, was on display after coming into the G7, calling Chinese President Xi Jinping an enemy and departing with this yesterday.
He's a great leader, President Xi, and one of the reasons that China's a great country is they understand how life works. China called last night our top trade people and said, let's get back to the table, so we'll be getting back to the table.
Meanwhile, some 2020 Democrats on the campaign trail, including former Vice President Biden, who vowed not to criticize the president while overseas, were blasting the president.
His trade war with China is blowing up in his face.
Donald Trump has no plan. Trade war by tweet is harmful to the U.S. economy. It's harmful to U.S. farmers.
Now, the president, Steve, as you mentioned, is back at the White House today. We'll see if he has more to say. But those Asian markets, a positive indication. We'll see what the markets do today. It's worth noting, though, that the president and the White House have not reversed course on those tariffs they recently announced. Those are still set to begin on September 1st.
All right. That's a report from Griff. Now, let me caution you. Of course, it's nice to see the markets go up. It sort of boosts our morale. But really, it is meaningless. Not meaningless, but it doesn't have as much meaning as it might seem to. Because really, the problems with China are so incredibly deep. We're not talking about just trade. We're talking about the communist crackdown on its people, the building up of their military. They're not going to reverse that over trade war. They're not going to do that unless they're held down for a long time and unless their economy shrinks a lot more than it has. And so this is not going to be an easy fix. My concern is that the president, our president, will relent too soon. That's what I hope he does not do. So I think that there needs to be more. It's probably should be more difficult for a longer period in order to bring China back into the realm of an honest broker. That'll never happen. But at least force them to broker more honestly, because they can't survive without doing that. There's an economist who was on Fox yesterday, Harry Kazianis, and he does a great job of explaining why the Chinese are so eager to come back to the table. Let's listen.
If you look at the structural components to this trade war, the United States would be destined to win it. And it's a simple math problem. The U.S.-China trade relationship is worth almost $750 billion. Actually, it's something like $700 trillion. The United States imports over $500 billion of Chinese goods. The Chinese only buy something like $130 billion. So when you look at the amount of tariffs that each side could apply, that the structural components to this, it's the American consumer that has essentially paid for the modernization of China.
Right.
Do you think for one second the Chinese want to give up those exports? No way. I think the Chinese will eventually be forced to make a deal. I think Trump is right on this.
Let me just tell you a couple of things that are not making the headlines, just mentioned, but not making them. The president has worked out a trade deal with Japan. Japan's a very strong trading partner of ours. He's also working with India. And I've been told that India is kind of like the untold story. The Indian economy is strong and that they are a strong ally of ours. They're growing and growing in technology. That doesn't surprise us, does it? Indian Americans take to technology like a duck to water. So it's no surprise that India should be rising on the economic spectrum and becoming a great free advocate of freedom and an ally to the United States. And so he's working with them as well. Meanwhile, you have people like Jennifer Rubin appearing on, I think this was MSNBC. Jennifer, I know Jennifer. I've interviewed her before a long time ago. She, you know, describes herself as a conservative. I'm not seeing that. Haven't seen that for a very long time. In fact, probably 15 years I have not seen that. But this is what she said about President Trump and the Republican Party. Let's listen.
I also want to echo something that my friend EJ said. It's not only that Trump has to lose, but that all his enablers have to lose. We have to collectively, in essence, burn down the Republican Party. We have to level them, because if there are survivors, if there are people who weathered this storm, they will do it again. They will take this as confirmation that, hey, it just pays to ride the waves. Look at me. I've made it through. And so up and down the ticket, federal, state, local offices, the country has to repudiate this. This has become a dysfunctional anti-government party. That is not what the country wants and what it needs.
Jennifer Rubin. So the president, according to CNN and MSNBC, Jennifer Rubin, he's chaos. He's mentally ill. He's crazy. He's not capable. And yet, Emmanuel Macron and the president stood side by side at the G7 summit. Emmanuel Macron took, I think, two, maybe three questions, and then he left. The president stood there and took question after question after question at his age. With all the information that he has to juggle, he stood there as the expert on every kind of issue you could imagine. I want you to hear just a little bit of the exchange. Now, this was a PBS reporter talking to him about, well, you'll hear. Let's listen, clip 10.
Thanks, Mr. President. Yemi Shalcender with PBS NewsHour.
Yes.
Why do you think it's appropriate to invite Russia to the G7, given that they've meddled in the 2016 election? And are you worried that if Russia does come to the G7, that it might hurt you politically, because it's only going to be a couple months before the 2020 election?
I don't care politically. I really don't. A lot of people don't understand this. I ran one election, and I won. Happened to be for president. I don't care politically. I'm going to run another election. I think I'm winning based on polls that we see. Whether I win or not, I have to do the right thing. So I don't do things for political reasons. Is it good? Probably not. Maybe it is. I mean, a lot of people are smart. A lot of people say having Russia, which is a power, having them inside the room is better than having them outside the room. By the way, there were numerous people during the G7 that felt that way. And we didn't take a vote or anything, but we did discuss it. My inclination is to say, yes, they should be in. They were... Really, it was a President Obama. I'm not blaming him, but a lot of bad things happened with President Putin and President Obama. One of the things that happened was, as you know, what happened with a very big area, a very, very big and important area in the Middle East, where the red line was drawn. And then President Obama decided that he was not going to do anything about it. You can't draw red lines in the sand. You just can't do it. And the other was in Ukraine, having to do with a certain section of Ukraine that you know very well, where it was sort of taken away from President Obama. Not taken away from President Trump, taken away from President Obama. President Obama was not happy that this happened, because it was embarrassing to him, right? It was very embarrassing to him. And he wanted Russia to be out of the what was called the G8. And that was his determination. He was outsmarted by Putin. He was outsmarted. President Putin outsmarted President Obama. Wait a minute. And I can understand how President Obama would feel. He wasn't happy. And they're not in for that reason.
All right. So that's a PBS reporter, Yamiche Alcindor. So not to be finished. The exchange continues, but let me just comment for a second. You know, the president, as in Trump, was right. President Obama was very enthused in his dealings with Russia. Remember his off-the-camera remarks to the president of Russia, whose name escapes me in this moment. The guy was under Putin. The placeholder, Putin actually handpicked him to carry. When Putin couldn't run again, he put him in his place. And then took back the leadership afterwards. So this is an off-camera remark, and the president says to him, I'll have more flexibility after this next election. President Obama, who loved Russia, his parents met in Russian class. His grandparents were Marxists. He grew up, his mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a communist who loved Russia. He was on the FBI watch list because of his activities. So President Obama grew up with a romanticized view, I believe, of Russia. He did everything he could to cooperate with them, and Vladimir Putin really did slap him down in taking Crimea, embarrassed him time and time again. So the president actually understated it. Here's PBS anchor Yamiche Alcindor continuing the discussion. Let's listen.
I'm only thinking about the world, and I'm thinking about this country in terms of the G7, whether it's G7, G8. I think it would be better to have Russia inside the tent than outside the tent. Do we live either way? Yes, we live either way. Is it politically popular for me to say that? Possibly not. I think a lot of people would agree with me, frankly, but possibly not. I do nothing for politics. I know a lot of you aren't going to, you're going to smile at that. I do nothing for politics. I do what's right. And people like what I do. But I just do what's right. If I wanted to go strictly by politics, I'd probably poll that. And possibly I'd say, oh, gee, I don't want Russia in. But I really think it's good for security of the world. It's good for the economics of the world. Remember, they're building a big pipeline in Europe going right up to Germany. And I said to Angela, who I had a great relationship, but I said, you know, you pay Russia billions of dollars and then we defend you from Russia. And I say, how does that work?
A misleading statement that Russia outsmarted President Obama.
Well, he did.
Other countries have said that the reason why Russia was kicked out was very clearly because they annexed Crimea. Why keep repeating what some people would see as a clear lie?
Well, it was annexed during President... I know you like President Obama, but it was annexed during President Obama's term. If it was annexed during my term, I'd say, sorry, folks. I made a mistake. Or, sorry, folks. President Obama was helping Ukraine. Crimea was annexed during his term. Now, it's a very big area, very important area. Russia has its submarine. That's where they do their submarine work, and that's where they dock large and powerful submarines, but not as powerful as ours and not as large as ours.
Well, I'm going to interrupt that conversation, but I just wanted you to hear that back and forth. Now, you know, you can. One thing I notice, because I've been watching this for a long time, reporters became hostile to presidents back during the Nixon administration. And perhaps some of you are old enough to remember how they shouted at Ronald Reagan. Sam Donaldson was one of the worst, and they were so disrespectful, and they'd shout out questions. They did the same with President Bush. Do you notice I'm noticing they don't do that with President Trump. Now, they're shouting out, but they listen to him, and he takes them on, and he answers their questions, and he's not easily offended. I'm surprised. I have never seen him lose his temper, not really. Maybe with the ABC reporter that was banned for a time, but never really losing it, getting angry. But it's just amazing. Honestly, there is a difference in the way these reporters who hate him are covering this president. And I just wanted you to see, by the way, the climate change session. There's this great picture of close to the middle, this big empty seat. The president did not attend that session. He thinks it's bogus. He thinks it's a hoax. And so he did not participate in that hoax. You know, this is the crazy president that some of us support, the one that's mentally ill, that can't quite handle, that can't remember all these details. Really? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
More than likely, you've seen or heard about the recent abortion laws in various states that allow babies to be aborted up to term. Your heart breaks, but you're not sure how you can make a difference in a positive way. The Ministry of Preborn invites you to help be the change. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Preborn centers throughout the nation are open to help women choose life. When a woman sees her baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life over 80% of the time.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry. And it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Karen Dunn Kelly, Deputy Secretary of Commerce. Ms. Kelly is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the department's $6.5 billion budget and its 38,000 employees. Corinthians 14:40 reminds us of the importance of good organization and management. But all things should be done decently and in order. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Karen Dunn Kelly as she handles the operations of the Commerce Department. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Volume 4 of our daily prayer journal is now available. To receive your copy, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A Pennsylvania diner serves up a side of kindness. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Lisa Melander was having a meal at the Eaton Park Diner in Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania the other day. She noticed an elderly man seated in a nearby booth, a 91-year-old World War II veteran named Frank. He apologized to the server for not hearing all that well on account of his war service, and he forgot his hearing aids. So the server dropped to one knee so Frank could hear better. And when he brought Frank's order, the server sat down and listened as Frank shared stories about the war, about his family, the places he'd been, the things he'd seen. The lonely war veteran just wanted someone to talk to. Mrs. Melander was so moved, she offered to pay Frank's meal, but it turns out another diner already picked up the tab. Just a reminder, there are still plenty of good and decent people in this country. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
A source close to the matter tells Fox News that federal prosecutors appear close to a decision over whether to charge former FBI deputy and acting director Andrew McCabe for lying to investigators. McCabe, a frequent critic of the president, was fired last year after the Justice Department's Inspector General, Michael E. Horowitz, found he lacked candor under oath over his role in a media leak about the Clinton Foundation case. McCabe is now suing the FBI and Justice Department for wrongful termination and recently joined CNN as a contributor. McCabe told the network earlier this year the allegations are false.
I never lied, never deliberately misled anyone, not in the IG's office, not in the FBI, and certainly never a director of the FBI under any circumstances at any time.
Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, told Fox he recently met with Attorney General William Barr over the forthcoming Inspector General report into alleged surveillance abuse and targeting of the Trump campaign. Senator Graham said all three are on the same page and want the records declassified to the fullest extent possible.
I want as much of that out. I think the Attorney General shares that view.
We want transparency, and that would serve the American people well. I want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly so this never happens again.
Even before this pending investigation, Inspector General Horowitz concluded a handful of FBI executives violated ethics rules by accepting gifts from journalists, misleading investigators, or leaking, among them former Director James Comey. But earlier this month, media reports suggested the Justice Department would not go after Comey.
Attorney General Barr will do what's right according to the rule of law. We're not out after revenge, we're after accountability.
The IG investigation into surveillance abuse began over a year ago, and like the IG's Clinton email report, it was basically done when new information came to light late in the process, delaying the public release. The IG FISA report is now expected sometime in September, Brett.
All right, Catherine Herridge of Fox. Sandy Rios back with you. So McCabe, Andrew McCabe, you will recall that he is now suing the Justice Department and the FBI director and the attorney general for what he calls being fired. He says he's fired for political reasons. Some of us understand that that phrase that Catherine used, lack of candor, sounds innocuous to our ears, but that actually means lying. That's not being upfront. See, FBI agents are not just held to a standard of telling the truth, but also withholding information. And so on four different occasions, he was found to have lack of candor, and he was referred for prosecution by the inspector general who looked at this earlier. Also, so now Andrew McCabe has been hired by CNN. He hasn't been prosecuted. He's turning around and suing. Saying he was falsely fired. Remember, that was McCabe who authorized the FBI to investigate President Trump. He also investigated Attorney General Sessions for what was termed potential perjury about Russian contacts, which was really ridiculous. I don't have time to sidebar into that, but it was a silly charge. He also was the one that arranged that interview with Michael Flynn. That was Michael Flynn's. They used it to charge him with lying to the FBI. It's twisted. And so I don't know what's going to happen here. I really don't. And I want to just, by the way, Judge Jeanine Pirro will be my guest Friday, and we'll be talking about this a lot. But I want to point you to an article by Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor. Andy, you've seen him on Fox a lot. He's a good friend. He was the prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh in the first World Trade Center bombing. I want to read to you what Andy has said in this latest his latest article. And he says, equal justice under the law is not supposed to be an aspiration or a quaint slogan. It's supposed to be a guarantee. And then he says, the date of a meeting, that's all the lie was about. George Papadopoulos claimed that a meeting he'd had with the mysterious Maltese professor Joseph Misfood happened slightly before the green as grass 20-year-old was recruited into the Trump campaign. In reality, the meeting was slightly after. It wasn't a very important lie. It was of no consequence to the FBI or the special counsel's investigation. Papadopoulos was such an afterthought that the Bureau did not bother to interview him until late January 2017, about 10 months after he met Mifsud. By the time Papadopoulos was charged, the Trump-Russia investigation had been ongoing for well over a year. It was already clear there was no conspiracy. Yet that did not stop Mueller's staff and Rod Rosenstein, their Justice Department superior, from indicting Papadopoulos on a felony charge. Nor did it stop them from exhorting a federal court to impose a sentence of incarceration. It wasn't enough that prosecutors and agents had scared the bejesus out of Papadopoulos by scheming to arrest him as he disembarked from a flight in the early evening, after the court was closed, ensuring that the young George would spend the night in jail. The fact that he voluntarily had spoken to the feds, that he had counsel who'd made themselves and him available to Mueller's prosecutors, that he was no flight risk. None of that counted for anything. After all, what fun would it be to call his lawyers and arrange his surrender for processing and quick release on bail? Not when government officials could flex their muscles and show him who's boss, right? I couldn't help thinking about the hardball treatment of Papadopoulos when yesterday CNN announced the hiring of Andrew McCabe as commentator. McCabe, of course, was the FBI's deputy director before being fired after the Justice Department's Inspector General Michael Horowitz concluded that he made multiple false statements to the FBI, including under oath. McCabe was questioned in connection with his leak of investigative information to the media. The leak may have damaged the FBI's investigation of the Clinton Foundation. It certainly exposed information the Bureau was trying to keep under wraps. As I've previously recounted, McCabe is quite the operator. According to the IG report, to try to throw Snoops off the scent, the then deputy director indignantly reamed out subordinates in New York and Washington as if these FBI field offices were guilty of the leak McCabe himself had orchestrated. His mendacity obviously obstructed the leak investigation, requiring additional interviews as agents ran down misleading information. McCabe has never been charged. Oh, I could just, Andy goes on, I'm going to read a little bit more of this, and we'll put this on our Facebook page. Government officials who leak while demonstrating their contempt for Donald Trump managed to land on their feet. McCabe joins a CNN stable that includes former Obama National Intelligence Director James Clapper, who is best known for lying to Congress about government's bulk collection of telephone metadata, and for discussing Steele dossier information with CNN shortly before the network published a report about it, and not long before it hired Clapper as a commentator. CNN missed out on former Obama CIA Director John Brennan, who falsely denied to the Senate that his agency spied on the Chamber's Intelligence Committee. Brennan, who said he was really sorry, was inked by MSNBC. So he goes on to say, so Papadopoulos, he was arrested because he supposedly lied to the FBI, and the lie was about that meeting. He said it happened shortly after or before he went with the Trump campaign, and actually happened shortly after. That was his lie. And that's Andy's point. He says there's a great deal of anger out there. People see the kid gloves approach to the Clinton email investigation, and they can't square it with the aggression of the Trump-Russia probe. They see the laws contorted to let Mrs. Clinton slide while the screws get put to Michael Flynn and Paul Manafort over the Logan Act and the Foreign Agent Registration Act, statutes that the Justice Department almost never invokes. They see the false statements investigations of Andy McCabe and George Papadopoulos and think, hey, wait a second. Equal justice under the law is not supposed to be an aspiration or a quaint slogan. It's supposed to be a guarantee. I just read it, you know why, because he said it better than I could say it. It's just unconscionable what's happening, at least what we think. Maybe when the Inspector General's report comes out, now allegedly September. I'm not discouraged by the delay in it, by the way. I think people like the CEO and founder of Overstock that we discussed yesterday. By the way, if you missed that show, you'll want to go on and listen to it again and go online and read about his testimony, who was cooperating. The FBI recruited him to set up the Trump campaign, among other things. So I think more people like that are coming out. I think we're going to hear a lot of things, but whether people will ever pay for what they have done, people who have, you know, D.C. zip codes or Northern Virginia or Maryland, whether they will ever pay for what they have done remains to be seen. All right, so Phil Keating had a very interesting story last night. I was going to talk to you about it yesterday, but I'll let Phil tell the story, and then I have some follow-up comments. Let's listen.
First out is NASA's Anne McLean.
In a first, an astronaut is accused of committing a crime while in space. NASA flight engineer Anne McLean is now under investigation for allegedly hacking into her estranged wife's bank account, all while orbiting Earth. This all centers on a bitter custody dispute between the astronaut and her wife over a young boy they've been raising. McLean reportedly submitted to an under oath interview last week with NASA's Office of Inspector General.
He tries to use that against me.
Her ex accuses her of accessing her bank account, using her password, and investigating her spending activity from on board the International Space Station. Over the weekend, McLean defended herself via tweet, quote, "There's unequivocally no truth to these claims. We've been going through a painful personal separation that's now unfortunately in the media. I appreciate the outpouring of support and will reserve comment until after the investigation. I have total confidence in the IG process." On June 24th, McLean came back to Earth, landing in Kazakhstan on board a Russian Soyuz capsule. Her wife, Summer Warden, a former Air Force intelligence officer, became suspicious during the mission and accused McLean of identity theft.
Ann has really been using the state of Texas laws and family court to be my own personal terrorist and just to terrorize me and try and manipulate me to signing over some sort of legal possession to her of my son, and I refuse to do so.
NASA declined to comment on this quarrel and possible crime as it's a personnel matter. McClain, who graduated West Point, almost made history on a less notorious note earlier this year when she was pulled from a spacewalk, which would have been the first all-female spacewalk.
All right, so many things to say about that. So now we have a female lesbian married to another woman, astronaut, and we are supposed to believe that this kind of confusion, her wife, Summer Warden, so we have wife and wife, they have a baby by artificial insemination. So the wife, Summer, gave birth to the baby. Now they're fighting over custody. Even listening to Phil's report just reminds you of why God established male and female. Just as he created order out of chaos at the beginning of creation in the universe, separating the water from the land, the stars from the atmosphere, how he laid the planets and put things in motion. That centrifugal force, all of the things that we live at, you know, carbon dioxide and oxygen in the air, all of those things that he laid in place to bring order to nature and to the universe, he did in humans. He created male, he created female. So now you see the chaos that we have. How embarrassing. How embarrassing. All because centered on her sexuality, because they're having some lovers, some spat. This wife and wife. And it reminds me, you know, I'll just give you one example. If you think that this kind of gender mix-up, this kind of gender conflagration does not cause trouble, you need to think again. I will never forget the Bradley Manning case. Bradley Manning, who became Chelsea Manning, was an intelligence, as I recall, I think it was NSA. And over a lover spat with his gay companion, leaked thousands and thousands of documents that did tremendous damage to the United States. So Bradley is confined to prison. President Obama pardoned him. And in the process of being in prison, him became her, Chelsea. It's a sorry, horrible story. And do not think for a second that's the only case of this harming of the order of things. And I've told you before, I know personally about a story of a pilot of a major airline who was undergoing hormone treatment to change genders, who put his passengers at great risk because he was having he was on hormones and he was having a mood swing and just kind of angry with the passengers. It's so I mean, and I'm just telling you stories that I know about, and so we're creating chaos and very dangerous chaos in other ways. I want to tell you some good story, good information on that though. A good story. This happened in Leander, Texas. You probably heard that the city council voted 5-2 on August the 15th to end library room rentals to the public in the wake of an outcry over the drag queen story hour. And so a family organization, Mass Resistance, who are good friends of ours, Brian is from Massachusetts, and he's Brian Kamaker, has started Mass Resistance's all over the country, and Houston's is pretty powerful. Well, they're effective, let's put it that way. Now, they released an expose, for instance, of this drag queen it was supposed to read at this library, Valerie Gingy Abrego. The expose included many pornographic photos. Protests began to flare, and the city council finally said, you know, has now not allowed those to be drag queen story hour under the purview of the library. There are other stories around the place. Here's another one. Concerns about safety at the Drag Queen Story Hour events made headlines recently when Houston Mass Resistance discovered Drag Queen Alberto Garza, whose name was Tatiano Malalinga, when reading to young people, had been convicted in 2008 of sexually assaulting an 8-year-old boy. The Houston Library System didn't perform a background check. In Multnomah County Library in Portland, the library system quietly removed from social media photos of the Drag Queen Story Hour that took place in one of its libraries, which young children were shown lying on top of drag queens. I can't tell you what they were doing. It's just too graphic for our kids. I mean, this is what's happening in libraries and coming to a public school. You know, the kids in public school are drowning in this nonsense, too. By the way, a drag queen is challenging Representative Adam Schiff for his seat in Congress. We created some chaos here by calling things sane that are not sane. All right, I have to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you about something really, really very cool. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What is the source of America's greatness? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexis de Tocqueville, a 19th century French political thinker and philosopher, had this exact same question. On the heels of the French Revolution, he came to America in 1831 to investigate America's ascendancy. In doing so, he found that America's greatness did not lie in her economic system. It did not lie in her banking system, nor did it lie in her educational system. He found America's pulpits aflamed with righteousness was the source of America's greatness. He opined that America is great because she is good. But when America ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Let us pray for a restoration of the flame of righteousness in our pulpits.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We have been in a combat zone, and the stresses on soldiers come out quickly. It's an absolute joy to have the soldiers come back to you and say, man, you don't know how much that helped. It's a huge mission field.
Exploring Missions. Listen Saturday evening at 6:30 Central and Sunday afternoon at 1 on American Family Radio.
God has called each of us to do something for the kingdom. For me, it was teaching. Who knew it was going to be in radio?
Sandy Rios in the morning is a lifeline.
And I absolutely enjoy listening to y'all and learning from y'all.
We're doing everything we can to restore biblical values in this country. That's the point.
Sandy Rios in the morning, sharpening minds and stirring hearts to action. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Yale computer scientist David Gelernter made news last week by rejecting the theory of evolution. It's not that he converted to Christianity, but because science makes Darwinism impossible. The fossil record, he notes, is completely missing the transitional forms that show progress from one life form to an advanced one. Most species, he says, enter the evolutionary order fully formed and depart unchanged. He also observes that molecular biology demolishes the theory that genetic mutations can explain the increasing complexity of life. They can't, because mutations are invariably fatal to organisms. Mutations don't advance life, they kill it. So, science cannot explain the appearance of advanced life forms, or how one species can develop into another. It's almost as if a sovereign, all-powerful creator is responsible for the whole thing.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A central tenet of globalization is that national security considerations need not be factored into trade and financial transactions. As long as money can be made, anything goes. Communist China has exploited such thinking to destroy much of the U.S. manufacturing sector, massively transfer our intellectual property, and create American supply chain dependencies on an adversary for things like pharmaceuticals and electronic gear that are simply insane. Globalists on Wall Street have even created investment indexes like the MSCI that enabled the Chinese military to fund its threatening buildup with our money. And we learned yesterday that they're poised to pour the pension funds of millions of past and present U.S. government employees into PRC companies that enable, for example, the communist police state, build fortified man-made islands, and construct aircraft carriers. Putting America first means ending such reckless globalism. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The race has come down to Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and Vice President Biden. It's a three-way race.
I just spoke at Dartmouth on health care. At the medical school, or not, I guess I wasn't actually on the campus, but the people from the medical school were at the, I want to be clear, I'm not going nuts.
We got a government that's working great
for the bazillionaires, but just not working for them. And they know that to change that, it's going to take all of us. Nobody gets to stay on the sidelines. And that's what I'm seeing in these crowds, people who are all in.
Many of the ideas I talked about 4 years ago that everybody said were crazy are now being talked about by every other Democratic candidate.
Very interesting, because Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have moved into the top spot. And of course, their theme is that people are making too much money. Elizabeth Warren, bazillionaires. How dare they take the money away from the regular people? Meanwhile, you do know, don't you, that Bernie Sanders is a millionaire. He's worth multi-millions of dollars. He has three homes. Elizabeth Warren is a millionaire also. And now we're hearing, of course, remember President Barack Obama talked a lot about, he was not a fan of wealthy people or people that were doing well, business people that were thriving. Remember he told business owners they didn't build that. He says there's only, he said in 2018, there's only so much you can eat. There's only so big a house you can have. There's only so many nice trips you can take. I mean, it's enough. And we could go on and on with things that President Obama said about being wealthy and gaining income. But now we know that the president and his wife, who earned, you know, a salary of $400,000 as president, and before that, I know because I was in Chicago, they did not have money. They had to borrow money to build their house or to buy their house in Chicago. Remember Tony Rezko, that shady real estate deal that happened with the Obamas? But now they're doing pretty well. They just bought 29 acres on Martha's Vineyard and a 7,000 square foot house for $15 million. So they're doing very well, these people that don't believe in capitalism. So just thought I'd point that out. And speaking of that, we have people who are serving us in the military faithfully. We've been at war for many years now. They're still dying. Just last week, I think it was last week, two more soldiers were killed in Afghanistan, and yet they're kind of the forgotten population because so few of us have family members in the military. And that's why this next thing that we are participating in is so important. It's called Operation Tank Full of Love. And with us this morning is Eric Horner, who is the guy that started all this. Eric, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
I don't know how many years you've been doing this. How many?
This is year number 9.
Wow. So you are you a soldier, Eric, or you just live near Fort Campbell, Kentucky? Or how? What was the impetus for this whole thing?
Well, you know, my wife knows what it's like to stretch the military dollar. I did not serve. My wife's former husband was one of the Marines killed in the Beirut bombing in 1983.
Wow.
And she's the one that taught me about the sacrifice and how deep it runs. And this is something that's really near and dear to her heart, but she does. She knows very well what it's like trying to stretch that military dollar. And we just, you know, 9 years ago, we pulled our bus into the truck stop down the street from Fort Campbell. And as I stepped off, there were probably, you know, 8 or 9 soldiers out there getting their gas. And I just thought, I wish I had the means to go and put my card in every one of those pumps and just say, it's on me today. Thank you for serving. And the Lord just did the rest. By that evening, I knew what to call it, Operation Tank Full of Love. And we started out that first year. We raised about $8,000 and thought we had really done something. And it took us a couple, just 2 hours to give that all away. But it's grown every year and in ways that only the Lord could do. And right now we're sitting at $320,000. So it's been an amazing 9 years.
Well, actually, Eric, let's get specific because some people are hearing this for the first time. What is it that you are asking our listeners to do? How can they help you, and what are you doing exactly?
Okay. Well, Operation Tank Full of Love, what we do is we take over that truck stop pretty much for a day every September. We raise funds throughout the year. And we go and we'll take 100 volunteers, 120 volunteers from churches all around that area. Well, not just that area. They come from all over America. AFR listeners who've heard about this on the air have made that drive from Houston, Texas, from just from everywhere. And once they come and serve one time, they come back. And we just we meet the soldiers at the pumps. We give them some free gas. We give them a gift bag that shares the good news of Jesus Christ with them. We offer to pray with them. You know, I tell my volunteers, do not be heavy-handed with your faith, but just ask if there's anything that we can pray with you about, and some of the prayer requests will just knock you down. It's awesome to watch prayer meeting break out on the parking lot of a truck stop. It's really cool to see. But we talk a lot about the free gas, but the free gas, in my mind, is the least of what they get. You can't put a dollar sign on the encouragement they receive when they come through.
Yeah, it's kind of like medical missions, you know, the same but different. You reach or fulfill a person's physical need, something practical, and in the process you demonstrate Christ's love, and then you can speak about Jesus openly. You have the right to speak.
Yes.
And so if you would like to help, you can visit AFR.net, AFR.net, or you can call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Eric, give us an example. I know it's been a lot of years now, but give us an example of the kind of ministry you've given. You've painted a really compelling picture, but tell us about a particular soldier or story that's been the fruit of this work that you're doing.
The stories have been so numerous. One thing we hear a lot is well, this makes a difference on what goes on my table for my children. But we've had stories, you know, everybody's situation is different. We've had we had a family come through 1 year, and you wonder, because when you start looking at the dollars and cents, you're not really giving away that much. And sometimes it's surprising how much that helps a military family. We had a family come through 1 year that sent us a note later in the day through Facebook, and it said, "We just want you to know how much this helped us." She said, I woke up this morning and realized I'd made an error in my bookkeeping, and we had $18.65 to live on with three children until the end of the month, and this was the 11th of the month. And just, you know, story after story, we had one couple come through, and a soldier had his wife with him. She said, "We don't broadcast this, but she said, "We've been in such a situation financially that my husband's been going and selling his plasma to have gas money to get back and forth to the post." You know, just all kinds of stories. And so we know that the Lord is in this, and we're seeing some real results in doing something real that's really helpful for the military family.
Eric, I just have to say that it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that the military, the personnel, the people serving, there's been, chronic suicides, trauma already for PTSD, which is we've known about for, you know, generations, really.
Yes.
But that's after serving so many deployments, that's what you're up against. I'm curious if you know this. I know that in recent years, the military families have actually been barely making it with the money that they receive.
Mm-hmm.
And some have had to actually get food stamps. And,
right. You
know, they've just been scraping. Has anything improved in that regard?
I don't know. I don't have... You know, a lot of the soldiers that I see with our ministry, as far as the concert ministry, are at the very beginning. They're in basic training, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
I can't honestly answer that.
Yeah, well, that is certainly a concern. I hope that that's improved, and maybe we'll find that out. But certainly they never will be making a lot of money.
No.
That's for sure.
Not enough.
And they have a lot of children, and I think you're right that this is kind of a gateway to tell them about Jesus. You know, I don't know if you know this, Eric. I'm asking you things you don't necessarily have to know, but I heard probably 4 or 5 months ago that there was a real revival breaking out, I think especially in California, on bases. What are you seeing spiritually, or do you know what's happening at Fort Campbell?
We do see, our concert ministry, we do basic training sort of things, and what I see in the chapel services is incredible. Those soldiers show up, and they are ready to worship the Lord. And I understand that California, and I understand over in Missouri, at Fort Leonard Wood, they've had an amazing revival going on there. And it kind of boils down to the chaplain, his background, his intentions, if they're, you know, because chaplains serve in so many different capacities, but if you get one in there that's really a soul winner, that really, you know, that just really on fire for Jesus, you really start to see revival among their soldiers. It's really awesome.
You know, one of my favorite videos is not new. Have you seen that video of the Marines at Camp Pendleton seeking the days of Elijah?
That's awesome.
I just love that, because this was when the conflict was really involved thousands of our soldiers in the Middle East. And that is just one of the most worshipful videos, honestly, I have ever seen.
It's awesome.
But, all right, so September 21st, it'll be Operation Tank Full of Love. Eric Horner is asking you if you would help to buy some gasoline for soldiers at Fort Campbell. And you can do that by going to AFR.net, AFR.net, or you can call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. God bless you, Eric, you and your wife, for all
that you're
doing.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
We'll look forward to seeing what the results are. Thank
Amen.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I have such a heart for soldiers, I guess, because there's a lot of military in my family. I have a nephew right now who is serving with the Navy. He was actually in France during the D-Day celebration, recent D-Day celebration commemoration. And the irony is, it's funny because he is a product of American public schools, and he had so little knowledge about history, even World War II. And as he was there, he began to learn, and he was just fascinated. And he contacted me, and it was just kind of cool. I don't see him much. I don't have a lot of connection with him. So, but I could see, you know, how the Navy is changing his life. And of course, service to the country is such an unusual thing. Most people don't ever do it. It's kind of an odd thing to most people. They think it's silly. They think it's dumb. They're too good to do that. I don't know how we ever got to that place. I think of the Israelis who all their kids have to serve, male and female, for 2 years. And I think it, having been around them, I think it is very beneficial to the spirit and love of country being fostered. I want to share one other article with you before we say goodbye today, because this is fascinating. The New York Times on July the 1st created an op-ed that decries fake news and calls for a more truthful approach to the, quote, myth of America as the greatest nation on earth. Times producers Teague Jensen and Naima Raza claim that the U.S. has, quote, fallen well behind Europe in many aspects and has more in common with developing countries than we'd like to admit. Well, now an organization called Just Facts has actually looked at the facts. And they are reporting that the poorest 20% of Americans are richer, on average, than most of the nations of Europe. Not Africa, not Asia, but Europe. The poorest 20% of Americans are richer, on average, than most nations of Europe. Let me just read this to you. When you add in charity, non-cash welfare, food stamps, the poorest 20% of Americans consume more goods and services than the national averages for all people in most affluent countries. So, in other words, if the U.S. poor, our poor alone, made up a nation, that nation would be one of the world's richest. All right, so let me get more detailed here, because they claim in this New York Times thing, they say... one of their claims is that America is the richest country, but we're also the poorest, with a whopping 18% poverty rate, closer to Mexico than Western Europe. The problem is, they didn't factor out what poverty meant. They used median and averages. So, in other words, they measure a high poverty rate to the U.S., they say, was 17.8%, higher than Mexico, which they say has 16.6%. In other words, according to the New York Times, 17.8% of our people are in poverty, and in Mexico, only 16.6%. But here's the deal. World Bank data shows that 35% of Mexico's population lives on less than $5.50 a day. 35%. Whereas in the United States, only 2% of people live on less than $5.50 a day. So in other words, we're not the poorest. They're extrapolating. They're taking the average of income in that country and calling the people in that country poor and equivocating our very rich poor with the very poor poor in Mexico and other countries. And so we're going to put this article on our Facebook page, too. It's written by James Agresti. I just think it's worth noting that the whole business that we're declining, we're not doing as well, is really not true. We are still so blessed. I don't know how much longer we're going to be blessed, and I'm not sure we deserve to be blessed, but the truth is we are still so blessed. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.